Han spent the next couple of days with the members of the Wookiee Underground, finalizing their deal. He was able to pack nearly 40 complete stormtrooper suits into the Falcon. If the armor fetched the market price, he doubled his investment on the trip. Not a bad bit of bargaining. Han decided that he wanted to wait for dawn for his tricky exit of the cave, so that night he said farewell to his hosts and stretched out on the pilot's seats to sleep. Han was awakened before sunrise the next morning by a loud and familiar Wookiee roar. Chewbacca was whining out a steady stream of complaints. What had Han been thinking of preparing to leave him behind? Didn't he know any better? What could you expect from a human? Han looked up at Chewie, completely confused. Huh? What do you mean I was going to leave you behind? I'm going back to Nar Shaddaa, and in case it slipped your attention, Chewie, you're a married guy now. Your place is here on Kashyyyk with Mala. Chewie shook his head, uttering protesting hoots and remonstrations. Life debt? Pal, I know you've sworn a life debt, but let's be realistic here. You belong with your wife on your own planet now, not dodging imp cruisers with me. The Wookiee had just started in again when a loud, angry roar from behind Han made him jump and dodge. He looked up to see Malatabuck towering over him. Chewie's wife was furious, teeth bared, blue eyes narrowed. How dare Han imply that Chewbacca would abandon a life debt? Her husband was possessed of great honor. He was a courageous warrior, a skilled hunter, and when he gave his word, he kept it, especially about a life debt. Faced with Mala's ire, Han looked up imploringly at his friend. Finally, Mala relaxed, and her roars turned to grumbles. Han gave her an apologetic smile. Hey, no offense, Mala. I know Chewie here better than almost anyone, and I know he's a terrific guy, brave, smart, all that stuff. I just didn't know that to a Wookiee, a life debt outweighs everything else. He turned back to his friend. So, okay, you're coming with us, and we're getting ready to grab some space, pal. So say goodbye to your bride. Chewbacca and Malatabuck walked away together. A few minutes later, Chewbacca slipped into the co-pilot's seat. Han looked at him. Don't worry. I swear to you we'll come back again. Soon. Moments later, Kashyyyk was only a rapidly dwindling green ball behind them as they tore through the star-flecked blackness. For the next 5 months, Han Solo and his Wookiee first mate rose to the top of the smuggler heap. Han managed to actually hang on to some of the money he'd won long enough to do most of the modifications on the Millennium Falcon he'd envisioned. He upgraded the ship's armor plating, engines, and armament. He added a light laser cannon under the nose, then moved the quad lasers so the Falcon had gun turrets both dorsally and ventrally. Then they installed two concussion missile launching tubes between the forward mandibles. The Falcon already boasted a military-grade hyperdrive, but they tinkered with both the hyperdrive and the sublight engines until they were even more powerful. They also installed new sensor and jamming systems. Finally, the day came when Han looked at the Falcon with satisfaction. She's purring like a Tagorian Kit Cup, and we've increased her speed another 2%. Han hadn't been this happy in a long time. He had a fast ship, friends in Chewie and Lando, credits in his pockets, and an attractive lady friend in Sala's End, a fellow smuggler, although she had been acting strangely around him since his return from the Sabacc tournament. On a number of occasions, Han had caught her looking at him as though she were somehow evaluating him. It made the Corellian uneasy. But even as Han's personal life was going splendidly, dark clouds were gathering on the horizon. The Emperor continued to tighten his grip, and his reach was extending even into the Outer Rim these days. In the past, Han had paid little attention to news vids about the struggle between the Imperials and the underground rebel groups. But now, knowing that Bria might be involved, he found himself listening to the news vids with undivided attention. Palpatine must be crazy, Han found himself thinking. With all those massacres, murders, citizens hauled from their homes in the middle of the night, never to be heard from again, he's asking for wholesale rebellion. Dissent in the Imperial Senate was growing by leaps and bounds. One of the most prominent senators, Mon Mothma, had been forced to flee not long ago after the Emperor ordered her arrest on charges of treason. The Emperor's high-handed move caused demonstration on Chandrila, Mon Mothma's home planet, demonstrations that resulted in yet another ruthless massacre of Imperial citizens. Despite the fact that he had his undersized hands full running Basadi, Durga the Hutt refused to give up his search to find his parents' murderer. He had had the entire kitchen and the servants' quarters scanned for any trace of X-1. Nothing. Durga frowned, contorting his birthmark-stained features into something resembling a demon mask. Something was niggling at him, a memory, niggling, wiggling, niggling, wiggling, wriggling the Nalatree frogs. Suddenly the memory was there, sharp and clear. Eric belching as he reached for yet another live Nalatree frog. Up until now, Durga had never considered the possibility that the poison could have been delivered by means of a living creature. But what if Nalatree frogs were immune to the effects of X1? What if their tissues had been filled with ever-increasing amounts of the poison without affecting them? Eric had loved his Nalatree frogs. He'd eaten sometimes as many as a dozen of them every day. Durga began undulating at top speed towards his parents' sanctum. Standing in the corner, forgotten, was Eric's old snake aquarium. He'd used it to keep live food fresh, and the last few months of his life, that live food had mostly been Nalatree frogs. Thrusting the scanner's probe tip into the snake aquarium, Durga activated the instrument. Moments later, he had his answer. The mineral deposits on the globe's glassine sides contained sizable amounts of X1. Durga let out a bellow of rage. Terruenza! Terruenza sent the frogs! Durga's first impulse was to fly to Yalicia and personally smash the Talanda Till to a bloody pulp, but after a moment's reflection, he realized that it would be beneath him to soil his hands and tail on a lesser being. Besides, he couldn't just do away with the High Priest. The Basadi Lord was uncomfortably aware that if he had Terruenza killed, the Talanda Till on Yalicia might well refuse to continue their charade as priests in the Exaltation.
I'll have to have a trained replacement ready to step in before I act against him, Durga thought.
Of course, the real murderer was the individual who had purchased the X1 and masterminded the entire operation. Jiliak was his prime suspect. She had the credits, she had the motivation. Durga would begin searching for links between the Dasilogic leader and Terruenza. One night, much to Han's chagrin, the meaning behind Sala Zen's penetrating looks became clear. Han, she said, there's something I've been meaning to tell you. Something really important. Han's heart sank. We've known each other a long, long time, and now that you have some credits to your name, we can finally settle down together. Han stared at her, too dumbfounded to speak. He finally managed, Sala, I don't think that's in the cards right now. She chuckled. I knew you'd say that, Han. Men, they never want to admit how they feel. Desperate to communicate without really hurting her with the truth, Han reached out and took her hand across the table. Sala, honey, we've never even said the word love before. Do you love me enough to spend the rest of your life with me? Sure, she said. Of course I do, Han, you know that. No, I don't think I do, he thought cynically. He had a slight shift of her eyes. He knew Sala was fond of him and had passion for him, but love? And Han didn't miss the fact that she hadn't asked him whether he loved her. She doesn't want to know the answer, he realized. Han spent one last night with Sala, but she was so wrapped up in her plans that she didn't even notice how grimly silent he was. Just before they turned in, Han looked at her and said, Sala, I ain't the Marion kind of guy. She laughed. All men think that, Han. Until they get married, that's the way men are. Not this guy, Han said, but she only laughed. The next morning, Han went by his place and packed up his clothes. He told Jabba he'd been taking some time off. He and Chewie could travel around the corporate sector, earn some credits, and give Sala some time to cool down and realize that he was not the smuggler for her. Han hadn't told anyone but Lando that he was going, and he was the only one on the landing pad to see them off. Okay, pal. Is the corporate sector by way of Kashyyyk okay by you? Chewbacca roared his approval of Han's suggestion so loudly that Han's ears rang. Bria Theron walked briskly down the corridor of her command ship, the light cruiser Retribution. She was on her way to review her troops before their planned raid on the slaver vessel Helot's Shackle. Inwardly, Bria was excited and eager, but her features were composed and her blue-green eyes were as cold as deep glacial ice. Mentally, she reviewed her battle plan, analyzing it for weaknesses, making sure she'd covered every possible contingency with a backup option. The Corellian commander had an operative working on the space station orbiting Yalicia, who had told Bria that the Yalician priests were planning on shipping out nearly 200 exaltation-addicted and malnourished slaves to the mines of Kessel. For a moment, Bria wished she could give in to her own desires and go out with her people in the first boarding wave. The troops aboard those three shuttles would see the maximum amount of combat, make the most kills, and Bria had a personal grudge against this particular slaving vessel. Nearly 10 years ago, Helot's Shackle had narrowly missed capturing Bria, Han, and their two Togorian friends, Murg and Mrav, as they'd made their escape from Yalicia. Bria sighed, but she knew that her place during the first wave was aboard her command vessel, coordinating the attack, identifying pockets of heavy resistance in order to best allocate her troops for the second wave. This was Retribution's fifth mission for the Corellian Resistance. Bria had hated undercover spying projects and hadn't much liked liaison work. She'd been glad to leave them behind and get back to real fighting. It was Mon Mothma who had made it possible for Bria to go back into the real action. The renegade Imperial Senator had both the influence and the eloquence to convince individual resistance groups that a rebel alliance was a necessity. The Senator was better at it than Bria had ever been and spent all her time traveling from world to world, meeting with underground leaders. Just a month ago, Bria and the rest of the Corellian Resistance had celebrated the signing of the Corellian Treaty. The Corellian Treaty had inaugurated the rebel alliance Bria and the other Corellians had been working toward. To date, the fledgling rebel alliance had not been tested in battle. Bria was hoping that would soon change. 1 month after the successful capture of Helot's Shackle, Bria Theron, on a rare visit back to Corellia to meet with her commanding officer, walked quickly into his office. Pianat Torbal, a short, dark-haired man with intense eyes, looked up.
"Welcome home," he said. "Seems your medical officer is reporting great progress in turning those pilgrims you rescued off the Helot's Shackle back into normal citizens. Congratulations. Your faith in him and his new treatment seems to be paying off."
Bria nodded, her eyes lighting up. "It means a lot to me to be able to give those people back their lives.
Apparently, some of them are already talking about joining up with us once they've returned to health," Torbal said.
He glanced back down at his datapad.
"Helot's Shackle is almost finished being refitted for combat. We can really use her, Theron. Thank you for acquiring her for us."
Torbal clicked off his datapad, placed his elbows on his desk, and leaned forward.
"Bria," he said, "now that the official stuff is over and done with, I have to tell you that I'm concerned about some aspects of your record."
Her eyes widened in surprise.
"But, sir..." "Oh, don't get me wrong, Theron. You are a good fighter, an able leader. Nobody's gainsaying that. But look at the name those slavers gave you that your squadron cheerfully adopted. Red Hand, symbol of no quarter. Look at this report on the taking of Helot's Shackle. No prisoners, not a single one."
Bria stiffened. "Sir, they were slavers. They know how the civilized world regards them. They put up a lot of resistance, and not a one offered to surrender. They fought to the last."
"I see," Torbal said.
The two of them exchanged a long look, and it was the ranking officer who looked away first. An awkward silence ensued until Torbal cleared his throat.
"Things are heating up in the Outer Rim," he announced.
"The rebel groups out there are really understaffed."
"Sir," Bria said.
"Yes?"
"I think I may know a way to get more recruits."
"What is that?"
Bria leaned forward.
"Sir, there are over 8,000 pilgrims on Yalicia. Give me just a little help, an old troop ship for transport, a couple more cruisers, some more troops, and I can take that planet. I can shut down the Yalician operation for good. We'll take every colony, free every slave there. Hundreds of them are bound to join us, if the percentages we've seen so far are any indication."
"We don't have the troops.
Not all of the Corellian resistance would be enough to take a whole planet, Theron."
"We're getting recruits in from Alderaan every day," Bria pointed out truthfully. "And there are so many Bothan and Sullustan pilgrims on Yalicia, those worlds might send us some troops and ships."
"And what about Chandrilla? They're part of the new rebel alliance, sworn to help us."
"Sir, it could work. We can free those slaves. And while we're at it, we could take the spice to sell on the open market. We're always short of credits. We need weapons, medical supplies, uniforms, ammo, you name it."
"True," he said. "Fighting a resistance is an expense."
Boba Fett, the most famous bounty hunter in the galaxy, stood in the queue waiting to board the luxury liner Queen of Empire, disguised as an Animid. It was necessary from time to time, he'd discovered, to appear as a being other than himself. Animids were perfect beings to assume as disguises, since hardly any of their bodies showed in their ordinary street garb. They also wore gloves and vocalizer masks. Animids had wispy grayish hair, leaf-shaped ears, and large silvery blue eyes. Boba Fett, of course, wore a head mask beneath his vocalizer mask, but it was a very good one, custom made to fit over his own features so that it would move quite naturally on his face. Silver blue eyes were built into the mask and were specially engineered so he could see quite well. When Abria Laval showed up on Fett's database summaries as a passenger aboard the Queen, a quick check of the woman's ID and physical description had shown Fett that there was a better than 70% chance that this was actually Bria Theron, commander in the Corellian Resistance. Only a visual inspection would assure Fett that she was the right woman, so here he was, standing in line to board the huge liner. Fett moved forward, nudging his case along with him. It contained, in camouflaged compartments, his Mandalorian armor and several select weapons. Over the next 3 days, Fett wandered the ship in his Animid disguise, staying mostly to himself. He made a visual ID of Bria Theron on the first day and followed her to find out where her stateroom was. He discovered that she had a suite and shared it with three men, two officers and a bodyguard. Fett kept her under observation and laid his plans carefully. Lando Calrissian enjoyed traveling aboard cruise ships and had done a lot of it lately since losing the Millennium Falcon to Han Solo. He could have taken any of the ships on his used spaceship lot for his own, but Lando was waiting for just the right ship at just the right price to come along. So far, no bargains had surfaced. Lando was sitting in the Queen's swankiest nightclub, the Star Winds Lounge, following a highly successful session at the Sabacc tables. He eyed the unescorted ladies in the lounge, wondering whether he was interested enough in any of them to ask for a dance. His eyes kept returning to one woman who was sitting at a table with not one, but two male escorts. Human, yes, and stunning. Long reddish hair swept up with jeweled sapphire combs and a face and figure that just wouldn't quit. The more Lando watched her, the more he became convinced that neither of the men was her date. Her smiles were more comradely than romantic. As the swinging trios struck up a catchy tune, Lando got unhesitatingly to his feet and walked over to her, flashing his best, most charming smile. "May I?" he asked, holding out his arm. She hesitated for a long second, glanced at each of the men sitting with her, then shrugged fractionally. "Thank you," she said, and stood up. Lando escorted her out onto the dance floor. She was nearly as tall as he was, and as they moved, they began to receive the admiring glances of the onlookers still seated at the tables. "Bria, what a lovely name. You're Corellian, aren't you?" "Yes," she said, stiffening slightly in his arms, her glance suddenly wary. "Why?" "Well, I was just thinking that I've only heard that name once before. Is it common on your homeworld?" "No," she said, "I thought I was the only one."
"You probably are," Lando said. "The other Bria I knew was a ship. My friend Han named a ship he leased from me the Bria."
She missed a step, recovered quickly.
"Han?" she said. "I used to know a Corellian named Han. Is your friend Corellian?"
Lando nodded and twirled her in a spin. They danced several more dances, and Lando enjoyed her company tremendously. "So, do you want to have a drink, perhaps? Somewhere a bit more private?" She gave him an assessing glance, then nodded and stepped back out of his arms. "All right, I'd like that. We can talk about mutual acquaintances." Lando reached for her hand, then raised it to his lips. "Mutual acquaintances it is," he said. "My stateroom, number 112, in, say, 30 minutes," she said.
30 minutes, Lando said. "I will be counting every one."
Bria told herself to settle down as she hurried down the corridor towards her stateroom, but she was excited, realizing that she was finally going to get news of Han. She was so absorbed in her memories that she had no warning at all. One moment, the door was opening before her, and the next, a powerful thrust propelled her through the portal and into the living room of the suite with such force that she didn't even have breath to cry out. Just as she started to fall, Bria felt something sharp sting her back. She only had an instant to realize that she'd been shot with some kind of knockout drug. As she fell, she managed with the last of her strength to turn slightly and saw a strange Animid standing behind her in the doorway. When Bria regained consciousness, she found herself bound so efficiently that she didn't even bother struggling past the first moment. She was alone in the living room, sitting on the lush carpet propped up against one of the armchairs. She took a deep breath and prepared to let out a scream that would be heard even outside the closed door of the stateroom. It was then that she noticed two things: a sound sponge
The little device would effectively muffle any outcry she could make, and the bodies of her companions stacked efficiently out of sight of anyone at the door. Bria shut her mouth and her eyes and leaned her head back against the chair. Great. Whoever that animate is, he thought of everything. As she sat there, struggling to think of something she could do, the animate opened the door to the stateroom and entered, carrying a huge, heavy case. Seeing that Bria was awake, he went into the fresher and soon returned, carrying a glass of water. He knelt beside her and turned down the sound sponge so she could hear his voice.
That sleeping drug causes great thirst. This is plain water. I have no intention of harming you. The bounty on you is for unharmed delivery.
He shoved his vocalizer mask aside and took a long drink. The water is safe, he said, holding it back out. Bria blinked at him, then her thirst won out. She drank deeply as the animate helped her. As Bria leaned back against the armchair, she said, You're not an animate. They can't speak without their vocalizer masks. You're obviously a bounty hunter in disguise. Who are you? The animate regarded her from featureless silver blue eyes.
Observant Bria Theron. You would know me perhaps by my adopted name, Boba Fett.
Boba Fett? Bria sagged back against the armchair, eyes wide, fighting the fear that even the casual mention of that name brought. I didn't think you bothered with dinky Imperial bounties. The bounty hunter nodded.
True. Basadi Clan's bounty is 100 times that.
Tirowenza, Bria whispered. It has to be. Last I heard it was 50,000, not 100.
Following your capture of Helot's Shackle, Basadi doubled that.
Bria was trying to remember her training and what to do if captured. She decided to bide her time and keep Fett talking if she could. All her instructions said that the more captors came to regard a prisoner as a real person, the easier captivity became, and the greater the chance that someone would get careless. You know, she said, I've heard a lot about you. Makes me wonder if all the things they say about you are true.
Such as?
That you have your own moral code. You're the consummate hunter, but no bully. You take no pleasure in inflicting pain.
True,
he said.
I am a moral person.
What do you think of the Empire? She asked as he began checking the heavy case he'd lugged into the room. She caught a glimpse of his famous helmet.
I believe that the Empire, though morally corrupt in some ways, is the lawful government. I obey its laws.
Bria wet her lips. You know that Tirowenza and whoever is running Basadi these days are planning to kill me in some protracted, hideous fashion, right?
Yes. Unfortunate for you. Profitable for me.
Bria nodded and fixed him with an appealing gaze. Then maybe, I know this seems unusual, but under the circumstances, perhaps you wouldn't mind...
What?
She took a deep breath. I haven't seen my dad in years, but I've found ways, safe ways, to let him know I'm alive.
Go on.
The bounty hunter's voice was absolutely expressionless. Anyway, I don't want him to wait and wait for a message from me. Could you let him know I'm dead? He means a lot to me, so if I gave you his name and location, could you just send a message? Bria's dead, that's all. To Bria's surprise, Boba Fett nodded.
I will do so. What is...
The bounty hunter broke off as the door chime sounded. Quickly, he turned the sound sponge all the way back up. Going over to the portal, he keyed it open, standing back behind it.
Lando, no!
Bria shouted.
Go away!
The sound sponge soaked up the noise, absorbing it. Instead of filling the room, her shout was no louder than a whisper. Clutching his flowers and the bottle of fine wine, Lando stepped eagerly through the door to Bria Laval's stateroom. Sorry I'm a few minutes late, he was saying. The florist was closed, and I had to... Calrissian broke off in confusion, his eyes widening as he took in Bria sitting on the floor by the armchair, her arms bound behind her. What? Lando started, then he caught a glimpse of the big case lying open on the floor. His dark eyes widened. Fett, he said.
Yes,
the bounty hunter said.
That had better be the last word I hear out of you, Calrissian. I am not here for you. Cooperate, and I may let you live. You might come in handy.
Lando knew better than to argue. Moments later, he found himself sitting several meters away from Bria, just as efficiently bound, his back propped against the sofa. Boba Fett regarded Bria intently.
Tomorrow, you and I are going to leave the Queen, walking closely together. I will be armed, but not with any weapon a visual inspection or security scan could discern. You will stay close by my right side.
The bounty hunter broke off as an alarm suddenly shrieks through the Queen of Empire. 15 seconds later, the entire Queen bounced. There was no other word for it. The huge ship heaved like a buoy on a stormy sea. Grabbing his case, the bounty hunter dragged it behind the ornamental screen that decorated one wall of the luxury suite. Faintly, Lando could hear the swish of robes being doffed. Minutes later, the bounty hunter emerged, clad once more in his Mandalorian armor. Walking over to Bria, he removed the restraints from her ankles and then did the same for Lando.
You two come with me, he said.
And,
Calrissian, remember, you're expendable. Lady Theron, if you try anything, Calrissian dies. Clear?
Yes, Bria said. Lando nodded. Fett picked up the sound sponge and deactivated it, stowing it in a pocket of his trousers. With the muffling device turned off, Lando could hear the sounds of blaster fire, screams, and running feet. As they left the passenger cabins behind, sounds of battle grew louder, closer. As they neared the shuttle deck, they saw sprawled bodies littering the corridor, most of them wearing uniforms marking them as the liner's crew. Lando licked dry lips, knowing that even with bound arms, he had to try to make some move before the three of them climbed into a shuttle together. He glanced sideways at his fellow captive, assessing her ability to possibly back him up if he tried something. For a moment, it occurred to him to wonder just why this lovely young woman, she couldn't have been much over 25, had Boba Fett after her. She must be more than what she seemed. They rounded a corner that led to the shuttle deck, and Lando caught a flash of bright color. Pirates! The pirate group drew nearer, then slowed uncertainly. Lando didn't blame them. He wouldn't want to be the first person to fire on Boba Fett, even at these odds. What's going on? A familiar strong alto bellowed. Lando let out a gasp of relief. Boba Fett, in the name of all the hells of Barab, what are you doing here?
Collecting a bounty,
the hunter replied.
No quarrel with you, Captain Renthal. I'll take my bounty and a shuttle and go.
Drea, it's me, Lando. Hey, am I glad to see... Lando's breath went out in a whoosh as the bounty hunter took one fast step backwards and the butt of Fett's blaster rifle connected with his solar plexus. Slowly, the ranks of pirates parted and Drea Renthal, pirate captain and Lando's former girlfriend, emerged. Renthal surveyed them and said, Lando, you never told me you had a bounty on your head. No bounty, Drea. He said, his voice harsh and breathless. I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Renthal looked back at the bounty hunter. Fett, that true? No bounty on Calrissian? The hunter hesitated, then responded,
True. I have an old score with Calrissian, but it is personal.
Drea Renthal considered for a long moment. In that case, Fett, you ought to be willing to let him go. Lando's kind of special to me. I might lose a little sleep if I let you take him. Tell you what, let him go, and I'll let you have the shuttle free and clear. Boba Fett nodded.
Very well.
Without turning his head, he said,
Calrissian, go. We will meet again. Someday.
Lando felt Bria move away from him, giving him room to edge around her and leave. The gambler wanted more than anything to head for safety, but instead he heard his own voice saying, No, Drea, I can't go without Lady Laval. You can't let Fett take her. Boba Fett wasn't often taken aback, but he heard Lando Calrissian's words with surprise, almost astonishment. He'd never figured Calrissian for anything more than a dandified coward. Fett's gaze returned to Drea Renthal. It was obvious that the gambler was an old boyfriend, but Renthal was a practical woman. Perhaps she would just cut Calrissian loose for his foolish stand and over another woman yet. Renthal locked gazes with Calrissian inside. Why should I give a Regnuff's patootie about this floozy? She your current girlfriend? No, Calrissian said. But Bria here is Han Solo's girlfriend. He risked his life to save your Y-wings and Renthal's fist from being blasted by Peacekeeper during the Battle of Nar Shaddaa. Seems to me you owe him. Renthal blinked. Bria? Her name is Bria? Like Solo's ship? This is that Bria? Calrissian nodded. Yes, she's that Bria. Drea Renthal grimaced and swore. Lando, you just love to make my life complicated, don't you? Okay, you're right, a debt is a debt. Reaching beneath her armored vest, she pulled out a heavy pouch. Jewelry and credit vouchers, Fett, she said. Let them both go, and you can have your shuttle. I don't want to fight, but I'm not letting you leave with them. Boba Fett looked at the heavily armed pirates, then at Bria Theron, and experienced a tiny flare of something that he recognized with dismay as relief. Turning, Renthal tossed the pouch to the bounty hunter. He caught it, weighing it, then surrendered to the inevitable. With grave dignity, Boba Fett walked between the ranks of pirates. Moments later, the bounty hunter was streaking through the blackness of space, alone. Bria's head spun at the sudden turn of events. One moment she was giving herself up for dead, and the next she was safe aboard the Pirate Queen's flagship, Renthal's Vigilance. Bria looked at the gambler. Lando, I'm very grateful to you. You stood up for me and you didn't have to. That took real guts. Lando smiled charmingly. What else could I do? You're far too lovely to let Boba Fett have you. Bria jerked a thumb back at the Queen of Empire's approximate location. Lando, what will happen to the passengers? Is Renthal, she hesitated, a slaver? Lando shook his head. Drea is a business person. She's ruthless when the situation warrants, don't get me wrong, but she's no slaver. And she will take us to Nar Shaddaa? I have an appointment to talk to Jilliak the Hutt. I have a business proposition for him. Lando frowned. Then you'll have to take a shuttle to Nal Hutta. Jilliak became a mommy hut last year, and she hasn't been on Nar Shaddaa since, I think. Bria nodded. I'll go wherever it takes. Talk to whoever I have to. Jabba lounged beside his aunt in her private audience chamber on Nal Hutta, watching and listening as Bria Theron made her appeal to Dasilajic. The woman spoke well, he had to admit, for a human, and he couldn't help but notice that she'd look divine in a dancing girl outfit. Almighty Jilliak, Bria spread her hands before her. Just think what an opportunity this is for your clan. If Dasilajic will just finance our group in terms of ammunition and fuel, the Corellian resistance will make sure that Elisha is no longer a thorn in your side. Wouldn't it be worth it to see Basadi brought low? And for such a modest outlay? We provide the troops, the weapons, the ships.
But you will take the spice stored in the warehouses, Jilliak said. All we would gain could only be measured in negative terms. Now, if we were to profit from this...
Bria Theron shook her head. If we take the risks, we get the spice, Your Excellency. Running a resistance is expensive. We can't just wipe out your enemies for you and gain nothing for ourselves. Jabba spoke up for the first time.
Let me make sure I understand what you are offering and what you wish from us, Commander. In return for our funding and our promise to eliminate the priests, your groups will land and destroy the Basadi Enterprise, blow up the factories, make sure there's nothing left for them to use in rebuilding.
That's right, Your Excellency, the rebel commander said. The risk is ours. Of course, we'll also take the pilgrims and the warehoused spice.
No!
Jilliak snorted disgustedly and waved dismissal.
Girl, we have heard enough, thank you, but...
Aunt,
Jabba said loudly. He continued in Huttese.
May I speak with you privately?
Jilliak huffed slightly, then nodded.
Very well, nephew.
When the Theron woman had been escorted outside the chamber, Jabba said,
Aunt, this human female and her rebellion are a gift from fate. Bria Theron is the perfect leader for this raid. Think, Aunt. Don't you remember who the two humans were who escaped from Yalisha after killing Zaval all those years ago?
Jilliak looked perplexed.
It was Han Solo and Bria Theron, the same woman.
Jabba could barely contain his annoyance.
She has a personal grudge against Yalisha. She will stop at nothing to shut the Basadi slaving world down. This is an offer too good to refuse. If we had to hire mercenary forces to eliminate the Yalishan Enterprise, it would cost us many times what we'd have to pay to fund these rebels. Think of it. Basadi, humbled and impoverished, this is a bargain.
Jilliak rocked back and forth on her massive belly, staring goggle-eyed into space as if trying to picture in her mind's eye how it would work.
So you would have us arrange to kill some 30 Talanda Til for the Corellian resistance,
she said.
What if that was ever discovered here on Nal Hutta? The Talanda Til here would raise such an outcry. They are our cousins, nephew. Humans are nothing.
Jabba hadn't thought of that. He remained silent, mulling her objection over.
I still think it could be arranged,
he said.
We've gotten away with multiple assassinations before, after all. Besides,
Gilliac said sulkily,
I don't want the Elysian Enterprise destroyed. I want to take it over. What good will it do us to Best Passati if the spice factories are destroyed?
We could build other factories,
Jabba said.
Anything would be better than having Passati warehousing that spice and driving the prices up and up.
Gilliac shook her head.
I am the Decilogic leader, and my decision is no. That is the end of it, nephew.
Bria Theron picked up her glass of wine, sipped it slowly, appreciatively, then smiled at her escort. Thank you so much, Lando. You don't know how long it's been since I could just relax. How long? Lando asked, twirling his own wine glass slowly in his fingers. Well, I imagine being a rebel commando leader is fairly time-consuming. Almost as time-consuming as being the mistress of a sector moth. Her eyes widened, then narrowed. How did you find that out? Nar Shaddaa is the criminal nexus of the galaxy, Lando said. An information broker owed me a favor, and I called it in. Commander Bria Theron, right? Her lips tightened, and she nodded curtly. Hey, Lando said, reaching out to touch the back of her hand gently. I know lots of secrets, and I'm good at keeping them. She smiled faintly. About Moff Sarn's shield. All I can say is that appearances can be deceiving. I was on assignment for the Resistance, but I was nothing more than a social hostess and aide for him, though he wanted everyone to think otherwise. So where will you go tomorrow after you leave Nar Shaddaa? I'll head back to my squadron and my next assignment, whatever that may be. Lando looked at her. Defeating the Empire means everything to you, doesn't it? She nodded. It's my life, she said simply. Have you ever been in combat? She asked Lando. Oh, sure, Lando said. I'm a decent gunner and a better-than-average pilot these days. I've seen action here and there, and of course, there was the Battle of Nar Shaddaa. Han and I were in the thick of it.
Tell me about that, she said. It just amazes me that smugglers, as independent and hard-headed as most of the ones I've known are, could band together like that to beat the Imperial fleet.
Always pleased to talk about himself and his escapades to an admiring audience, Lando launched into a fairly detailed narrative of how the smugglers had joined forces with Drea Renthal's pirate fleet to destroy many Imperial fighters and several big capital ships.
What a story, she said. Smugglers would naturally be the most experienced pilots in the galaxy, but they're also good fighters.
She blinked as though a sudden idea had occurred to her.
Do you think smugglers would hire themselves out for a military action?
Lando shrugged. Why not? There's a decent profit in it. Most of them would dare just about anything. She tapped her bottom lip with a manicured nail as she thought. Lando suddenly looked at her hand intently. Hey, he said, leaning forward to take her hand in both of his and examine it gently.
What happened, Bria?
She drew a deep breath. These old scars, a souvenir of working in the Elysian spice factories. She patted his hand. You're sweet to be concerned, Lando, but I'm not the one you should be concerned about.
People are dying every day on Elysia. Good people. People who deserve better than a life of unending toil, malnutrition, and cruel deception.
He nodded. Han talked to me about it once. He feels the same way, but there's not much we can do about it, is there? She gave him a fierce look.
Yes, there is, Lando. Someday I'm going to shut that hell world down for good.
Bria grinned suddenly, recklessly, and at that moment she reminded Lando very much of his friend. As Han would say, trust me. Lando chuckled. I was just thinking that you remind me of him at times.
Han was an important role model for me, she said. He taught me so much.
She was looking down at her scars. They crisscrossed her hands and forearms in thin, white lines.
It used to hurt Han to look at them too, she murmured.
Lando studied her for a long moment. He's the only one, isn't he? He said, finally. You still love him. She drew a long breath and looked up at him, her expression very serious.
He's the only one, she said steadily.
Lando chuckled ruefully, realizing that despite his best efforts and his fondest wishes, Bria's heart was with Han, and there it was likely to stay. She looked at him and smiled, then lifted her wine glass.
I propose a toast, she said, to the man I love, Han Solo.
Lando lifted his, clinked it against hers. To Han,
he agreed. The luckiest guy in the galaxy.